because nothing about this business is easy emotionally, physically, mentally, financially. And I would have prepared my body physically a little bit more for the relentless assault.
There's a small but mighty food community in Knoxville, Tennessee, the result of a fair number of Blackberry Farm alums who've decided to stay nearby after leaving. One of them has an 8-year-old pizzeria that continues to do things old school, from its natural starter to the hand-pulled mozzarella. The story behind Adopo, straight ahead.
Straight fire pepperoni.
I need a deep dish pepperoni and a thin sausage to go.
Can I get 2 cheesivores and 1 Detroit?
Can I get 1 large pep, 1 large sausage, and 1 large pep special?
This is Pizza City, the podcast dedicated to the art, craft, and passion behind the world's greatest pizzas. I'm Steve Dolinsky, author of Pizza City USA, the ultimate Chicago pizza guide, and founder of Pizza City Tours and Pizza City Fest. And welcome, everybody. Great to have you along with us for another edition of Pizza City, getting over a little bit of COVID here in Chicago and the below frigid temperatures. Boy, it is really cold this time of year in Chicago. As you may recall, I was running around the country in December trying to keep my 1K status on United. Mission accomplished, by the way. And one of my quick overnights was to Knoxville, Tennessee. And some of you are thinking, Knoxville, right. Why? Well, if you haven't already heard of Blackberry Farm or Blackberry Mountain, these are 2 4-star luxury properties not that far from Knoxville. You typically have to fly into Knoxville to go there. They've both produced a wealth of talent, both front and back of the house. Now, Brian Strutz worked as a line cook at Blackberry, but that was just a small part of his experience before opening Adopo, which is really more of a response to a life-changing trip he took to Italy when he was younger. Boy, heard that story before from anybody? Anyway, Adopo is a very special little restaurant in Knoxville, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Brian's other restaurant in town, Pachki, which is an ode to all things Eastern European, including some of the best, if not the best, matzo ball soup I've ever had. Yes, I said that. Truly a stunning place in the most unlikely place you could imagine. Look up Brett Anderson's story in the New York Times to read more about Pachki. But back to pizza. I had dinner at Adopo on a busy Wednesday night, and after my pizza, I caught up with Brian and started off by asking him about his first pizza memory.
So I grew up in South Florida, and for those of you who lived down there or lived in Coral Springs in the early 90s, I went to a place called Pizza Time. And they had a fresh tomato pizza where they put the tomato sauce on top of the cheese. And as an 8-year-old, that kind of blew my mind. And so to me, that pizza was the prototype for all future pizzas.
Was it a thin pie? Like, did you fold it? Was it kind of an East Coast thing, large slice?
As an 8-year-old, of course, I wasn't classifying styles. But if I had to look back, I would say it was more of a New York style. Deck oven, typical large foldable New York slice.
Okay, so what happened after South Florida? Did you go into culinary or working in restaurants? What sparked this love of pizza for you?
Well, there are 2 answers to that question. The book answer is that I had a family member teach me how to cook and I love to cook. But the real answer is that I found out in high school that if I could cook for girls on dates, I could convince them to go out on dates with me. So I'd invite them over, I'd cook them dinner at home, and to me it was just an easy way to get a date. And ended up being how I found my wife.
You are a wise man. That's a great method. Way to go.
Well, yeah, sure, it worked. We've been married since 2008, so we're very, very happily married. But yeah, in all honesty, when I was in high school, I was a cook. First job, I've always worked in restaurants. And for career day, I dressed up as a chef / restaurant owner. So since I was 16, it's something I wanted to do and ultimately planned to do later in life.
How'd you get to Knoxville?
We lived in South Florida, as already mentioned, and then my parents wanted us.
A large party out in the dining room.
We got to Knoxville from a job transfer for my father.
Okay. What was it like coming here? Because obviously not a pizza town.
Yeah, not a pizza town then, and really not a pizza town now. It's more of a football town. It's a great town.
You can get wings, you can get like probably nachos, stuffed potato skins.
Yeah, Knoxville, our claim to fame was the Petro, and it's called different things in different places, but in the World's Fair, when it came to Knoxville, we unveiled the Petro, which is a Frito, sort of a Frito pie, right? Corn chips, chili, sour cream, cheese, tomatoes, jalapenos, and that's one of the things that we're known for, and it's great.
It sounds like you need like a Lipitor after that, or a heartburn or something. Jesus. Okay, the Petro.
Yeah, all good things require some medicine to get it down.
Okay, but again, not a pizza town.
Not a pizza town, no. And I was young when we moved here, so for me it was more of a culture shock. You know, I played basketball and hockey and wore all black and listened to rap music, and all of my friends played football, and they were very much in the country, and I kind of had to reorient my whole worldview as a child in rural Tennessee. So it was a culture shock.
So you're living in a town where food maybe isn't the central focus here. It's more about football. You did cook for your future wife, and you're together now living here. How do you make this transition into Adopo?
Making the transition to Adopo was really a very long process. You know, I got a degree in marketing. I ended up working in television for a little while, where I pitched show ideas, reality shows, looked for talent, worked in editing as an online editor, offline editor, spent a little bit of time in the wine industry, many years in food as a cook, as a server. But then when my wife and I got married, we actually bought one-way tickets and moved to Italy and lived out of our backpacks, working on different farms, did an exchange program with some of those farms called a woofing, which is like worldwide opportunities on organic farming. I can't remember the acronym, but we spent most of our first year of our marriage living out of our backpacks farming in Italy. And I think that was the thing that really catalyzed all my prior years of cooking and training and studying and just sort of loving this industry. And so that was the start of it.
Most of the pizza you were experiencing was probably wood-fired Neapolitan, right?
Yes, what they say, a forno a legna. And not all pizza in Italy is the Neapolitan style, of course, but a lot of it very much is wood-fired because of its simplicity and its use of natural resources. What we found is a lot of the pizza we had there was actually rolled out, and believe it or not, more similar to a very small style called pizza tonda in Rome, which just means round pizza, which is done around the Vatican. But it's just a simple, rolled out, thin crust, 2-minute bake, wood-fired pizza all over Italy. The Neapolitan pizzas, in my experience, were focused around Naples. And now, of course, they're everywhere. It's very different. But when we were there, what we found was a thin, crispy, wood-fired, rolled-out pizza.
So what year, roughly, when you come back to Knoxville after this incredible travel experience with your wife?
That would have been 2008, 2009.
Which is really when this interest is cresting in the U.S. All these people are putting in wood-fired ovens now. I remember this wave in Chicago. I mean, that was, you know, the Spaconopolis, and everybody's talking about Neapolitan pizzas and the VPN certification's a deal. And so were you thinking, okay, I got to do this in Knoxville?
Not necessarily, you know, and I didn't always think I wanted to do pizza. I did happen to work in a Greek restaurant as a teenager working their wood-fired oven, and that's where I did meet my future wife. So there is a lot of, like, history to me and pizza and wood-fired pizza. But for me, my mother-in-law bought me a book about sourdough bread, and this was a few years before we opened the restaurant, and I just fell in love with everything about sourdough, and not because it was cool or fancy or anything. I just thought it was a process that was worth exploring. A pizza is a high margin food. Of course, labor's tough, but I have a degree in business, and I understood that if I wanted to take a risk on a restaurant, that restaurant needed to have the opportunity to succeed, unlike many other genres of food that are dead in the water when they start. So for me, pizza was a way to get into restaurants safely.
I want to ask you to repeat the story you told me earlier when we were talking about how you kind of DIY workshop this whole restaurant business. The people on the coasts and in larger cities are going to get really upset when they hear this story, because I've never heard somebody do a restaurant for so little money. How did you put this place together?
That's a great question. First of all, we live in a medium market size town. It's grown a lot in the last couple of years, but in 2016, which is not too long ago, 7 years ago, I was able to open the restaurant entirely through debt, through friends and family and acquaintances I had made over the years. And I put together a debt instrument, basically a note, where I asked for anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000 of debt for a five-year payment. I deferred principal for the first year, and I really gave myself a chance to have small payments, and we found people and convinced people to invest in us. Like I said, anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000.
And you told these investors, I'm going to do the first of its kind in Knoxville, sort of Neapolitan pizza, all-natural starter, we're going to make our own mozzarella, we're going to go all in.
Yes, I told them all the things you would tell them in your business plan. But anybody who's been in that position knows that these people who are handing you over a pretty good bit of money for them are not investing because they think you've got this amazing business plan. They're investing in you because they've either known you for 20 years and they trust you, or they want to take a risk on you. And fortunately for me, I had built enough relationships where these people did want to take a risk on me. So they did that. And all in, it was just a little over $200,000, allowed us to open a restaurant. All new equipment, of course. We sold our house to leverage the equity in the house. We moved in with my mother-in-law, and we lived with her for the first year, and really kind of threw all of our cards on the table. And like many other entrepreneurs, didn't pay ourselves for the first 2 years, squirreled away any money we made on the business, got out from underneath our debt, and then eventually were able to purchase our building a couple of years later, and really made some decisions that allowed us to be a restaurant that can exist for many years in the future because we control our own destiny.
2016, obviously people are familiar with Neapolitan pizzas by now. What was the local reaction? I mean, were people crowding it from day one, or did it take a while to educate people here?
That's a really good question. How did people respond from day one? We were busy from day one, but when I look back on it, what was busy then would feel so incredibly slow now. So I think it's a really difficult question. That's a very difficult question to answer correctly, because when you do a restaurant, whatever it is, for your first time, everything feels chaotic and crazy and unable to control and exciting. And it was all that. And we had a great response, but I really believe that our network believed in us. Our network of friends, our network of family, people. I've been here for over 20 years. And for me, I leveraged that. I leveraged every single bit of that. And that was like a buoy that kept us alive until we actually figured out how to make good pizza, which, looking back on it, it wasn't. It was crappy pizza. And nobody really thought that. Nobody knew that. But it gave us time to make it good.
And why go through the hassle? I mean, it is not easy to feed a starter every day, to pull curds and make your own mozz. I mean, very few Neapolitan places in the country do that. Why go through all that? Especially in a market where it's not commonplace, you can't get everything maybe as easy. Well, starters you can do, but like, I don't know, getting the curds for the mozz, that just seems more complicated and more work.
Well, there are two reasons for that. The truest reason is that I was naive. And I think anybody who opens a restaurant has to be a little bit crazy or naive. And without that, I never would have opened a restaurant. But the second answer to that, and I did, and this was part of my business plan, is that I wanted our food to be just complicated enough that our cooks enjoyed doing it. I wanted them to have a challenge. And if we dumbed everything down to be almost robotic in nature, I think people would lose interest and they would lose passion for it. And that has held true for all 7 years we've been open. And it gives people something to chase after, right? If your pizza's never perfect all the time, or you're always chasing something, I think that's good. Yes, of course, because of quality and flavor, but I wanted a process that required some effort and got people engaged.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking with Brian Strutz here at Adopo in Knoxville about his pizzas. We're going to go back in the kitchen, hopefully see, maybe, well, not you, but maybe your guy's going to make one for us, and you'll talk us through it. We're also going to preview some scenes from our next show coming up in 2 weeks, so stay with us. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're here at Adopo in Knoxville, Tennessee, with Brian Strutz, the founder owner of this fantastically busy restaurant on a Wednesday night. Boy, this is typical on a Wednesday? Holiday season.
Well, December is our busiest month, but no, we're a busy restaurant.
Okay. Okay, Dan's your guy on the line, right?
Yes, we're looking at our kitchen manager, Dan.
Okay, Dan's been here for a couple years. Tell me about let's start with your flour, 00, obviously.
Yeah, we're using a couple of different flours. Right now it's a Polselli super flour. It's a flour we started using when we were doing Roman pizza. And we're also blending it with some Caputo, the Nuvola.
You also do, you said Romans sometimes for like pop-ups and special events.
Yeah, in 2020 we were doing a Roman pizza, mostly because we were takeout only. But occasionally we pull it out for pop-ups and special events, and we love it. But okay, this style is more of a Neapolitan-esque pizza.
And you do a Levain? Like, tell me about your fermentation a little bit.
Yep, so we do a natural Levain, and we feed it every 12 hours. We keep it between 78 and 81 degrees. We have a pretty strict temperature-controlled environment. We have both a starter and a Levain. Our starter doesn't really ever change unless we refresh it. And from that, at its peak, we build our levains for our pizzas the next day. You know, a batch of dough might have 3 kilos of levain in it. We might do 3 or 4 batches in a day. Our pizza is all room temperature ferment. We start mixing our dough at 9 in the morning. We start balling around 12:30, 1 o'clock. And then we start making pies right after 5.
Okay, so he's got the, he stretched it a little bit, hand stretched on the marble surface with a lot of flour down there. What pie is he, I can't really see it behind the line. Can we get over there or no?
Of course, yeah, we can move over here.
Why don't we move over there? Okay.
Right over here, you've got the most we can make at a time. We can make 4 pizzas at a time. Up here in the front, we have what we call our Pizza Coletta. It's a very simple pizza. It's named after a friend of ours in Flagstaff called Pizza Coletta. It's cooked with a white base only, which is like got some local cream in it, mascarpone and pecorino romano cheese. When that comes out of the oven, it gets topped with really good prosciutto and then arugula, local arugula that's been dressed in lemon and lemon olive oil.
By the way, I'm just looking at the sauce. That's a Bianco di Napoli, right?
It is.
Beautiful ruby red.
Yeah, that's a Bianco organic whole peel. Really simple. All we do is add sea salt.
Okay, so the white pie, what else? You said the mascarpone and there's...
Local cream, mascarpone cheese, and pecorino romano. That one is mostly topped after it comes out of the oven. Next to that, we've got our Bianca pizza, which is ricotta, mozzarella, white sauce, black pepper, garlic, and it gets finished with honey.
I had a Sofia, which is basically a marinara with andouille, which you make yourself, and then your house mozz you put on post-bake.
Yes, absolutely, yes. So we make our mozzarella about 50, 60 pounds a day, and on the Sofia, we put that on after it comes out of the oven, sort of an homage to everybody's favorite burrata slice in Brooklyn. I think you know which restaurant I'm talking about.
Okay, so then into this oven, who makes this oven, by the way?
This is a Stefano Ferrara. It is 130 centimeter wood oven. Abby is piloting this oven right now.
How long's Abby been here?
Abby, you've been here, what, 3 years?
She doesn't know.
Yeah.
The heat kind of affects your memory, I think, but yes, 3-ish.
And so you can see that pie went in very recently and is already coming out. It's about 90-second bake.
Yeah, that is really a quick bake.
And they're going to be sliding these right behind me, so I'm going to move to the left.
Tell me about the wood. The wood, by the way, is chopped very small. That, I learned in Italy, is to get the even heat, right?
Yeah, the smaller piece of wood makes it more combustible. And so we buy our wood, which is split a little bit larger. And you can see on that wall, we have larger pieces at the top and smaller pieces at the bottom. The wood at the top is used during the day when we're building our coal bed, and the smaller pieces we use almost like the keys of a piano.
It's interesting, when she's pulling the pizzas out, typically they'll go on the counter, like on a rack to cool. You're putting them in it's one of those storage racks you see at IKEA, which has the grates underneath it, so you are getting that air exposure underneath it to let it cool properly.
Yeah, well, in the beginning, we were just putting them directly on the plates, and it was getting a little bit soggy, and over time, we just had to learn on our own what we could do to prevent that from happening, and it started with a sheet pan with a rack insert and eventually evolved into this, which has worked well for us for about 5 years.
Since COVID, I mean, a lot of people have struggled with this, you know, pizzas to go and delivery. Have you had to go down that path, or do you warn people if they're getting it to go, like it's not going to be the same as eating it here?
Well, I mean, looking around the room, you can see there's a button just about every seat, so we don't really have to worry about that, thankfully. Before COVID, takeout was maybe 10% of our total business, but coincidentally, we had been investing in a new takeout concept right before 2020, and when that happened, we leveraged that space and that oven entirely for takeout. So we have a separate takeout business, and you can see Casey, our host, walking out with a 15-inch pie. And there's another one right there. So those pizzas are coming out of a completely different kitchen, that nobody can see. So we're doing this for dine-in, and for those who want it as takeout, you're right. They know, buyer beware, caveat emptor, this pizza is not meant for takeout, but we do it if they want it.
But knowing what I know now, if I came back tomorrow, could I get the 15-inch New York-ish style thin to eat in, or no, it's only to go?
No, we're in the business to make people happy, so when people ever say, can I do something, we generally say yes.
Okay. Boy, these pizzas look just gorgeous. Anything else you're using that's local or notable sort of in the protein department?
You know, in terms of protein, all of our proteins are cured proteins. There's not a big curing operation in Knoxville or in the area. But one thing we have done is we've spent money directly into the local farming economy, have lent money to farmers to build hoop houses. So things like arugula, salad greens, sweet potatoes, we're buying locally.
And what are you looking for? Obviously, there's lots of charring on the cornicione. Some of these are like you know, modern in New Haven, quite charred to the point of being burnt, but not everywhere. But it's not your traditional Neapolitan leopard spotting, is it?
No, it's not. And this dough has not been retarded in the refrigerator, so it's not cold fermented, which accelerates those leopard spotting like you're seeing. So I don't even know. I guess what I would say is maybe it's a little bit New Haven. It's a little bit Ratza with the brown caramelization of the dough. It's a faster bake, of course. And honestly, it comes down to who's baking it. You know, Abby, who's on the oven right now, has got a lot of control over that oven. And depending on volume and depending on pacing, is going to really dictate the color of some of this pizza.
Beautiful stuff. And I just, again, I don't need to eat another pizza now because I had the Sofia earlier, but the chew is wonderful. And you get that contrast. I like the cold and the hot. So putting a little bit of sort of cool, fresh schmatz on top of it and letting the heat, kind of ambient heat, melt it just a little bit, but not totally melted, really lets you appreciate the sort of the inherent saltiness and just the beauty of a fresh mozzarella. You see all the balls sitting here in water right next to the prep line.
I mean, I agree with you. Historically, pizza's been a food where all the toppings go on before it's baked, and then it comes out of the oven, it's cut, it's boxed, and it's sent on its way. But really, a pizza can be sublime if you treat it the same way after it comes out of the oven as you did before.
All right, well, you've heard the show before, so you know what the last question's gonna be. We ask all our guests the same thing. Knowing what you know now about pizza making, and you are well into this, 6-7 years, what would you have told yourself in 2015 before you opened up to be successful today?
What I would have told myself in 2015 is to start practicing for a marathon, because nothing about this business is easy emotionally, physically, mentally, financially. And I would have prepared my body physically a little bit more for the relentless assault that the industry has on you.
That's great advice. You ever go to the Pizza Expo and walk that floor in Vegas?
We had tickets to go in March of 2020, and that never happened.
The restaurant, again, is called Adopo. It's in Knoxville. Come see Brian Strutz and his staff. Go see Dan, Abigail. They're really doing an amazing job here, and they are cranking on a weeknight. Brian, thank you so much. What a pleasure. Congratulations on all your success here.
Thank you. The pleasure was all mine.
Okay, coming up in 2 weeks, we are off to the nation's capital to see what a former chef for Jose Andres is up to with a Detroit-style pizza influenced heavily by the chef's own Japanese upbringing in Hawaii.
What do I like? And I do love Pizza Hut, and I love the pan pizzas, and I also love Detroit-style pizza. So that's what we decided on, is to do Detroit-style pizza, where we could focus on just making a really good bread.
I'll talk with Katsuya Fukushima of Tonari. That's in 2 weeks on February 2nd. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend and rate us, please. Also, a reminder to support the show at anchor.fm/pizzacity. We have no commercials running right now, so that's how we get support, folks. anchor.fm/pizzacity. We're at Pizza City USA on Instagram, and our website is pizzacityusa.com. Bureaucratic wrote and performed our theme song, and here's wishing you an optimal bite ratio always.